coming in as Lube. Hewitt-Dyke center net.
Flame bench, there's all kinds of excitement going on there.
Scores! Roll the highlight reel. 6-0 Flame.
Eckers, put it in the wind column.
Yeah, baby, yeah, baby, yeah, baby.
This is Flames Talk with Pat Steinberg and Wes Gilbertson on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
All right, let's get to it. We are underway this hour on Flames Talk. It is Tuesday, February 4th, and we welcome you to the Sports Drive brought to you by Calgary Lock and Safe. Simplify your life with a security ecosystem. Go to CalgaryLockandSafe.com to request a security audit and get a tailored solution. With Wes Gilbertson of Post Media, my name is Pat Steinberg. Welcome to the Scotiabank Saddledome. That's where we're hanging out on this Tuesday edition of Flames Talk. We're available on Apple, Spotify, Amazon, Seeker, or wherever you get your podcasts. Hello, Wes.
Hello, Pat.
It's a game day against the Toronto Maple Leafs that is ahead of us here at the Dome as well. And I got to say, as this gentleman gets set to play his third game as a member of the Flames and second game here at the Scotiabank Saddledome, I've really liked what I've seen so far from new Flame center Morgan Frost. He scores a big goal on Sunday. He's been good in the faceoff dot, was really big for them, taking faceoffs in the Sunday win over Seattle. He's been driving that line with Sharon Govich and Pospisil, and it's been a really good line on Sunday night against the Kraken. 62% in the faceoff dot, went 8-5 in the dot, which takes a little bit of the pressure off of Kadri and Backlund taking faceoffs. So I've really liked what we've seen from Morgan Frost, and with no disrespect meant at all to Joel Farabee, but Frost was the guy the Flames really needed. Like, Frost was the guy that they needed to fill a void on, and that is their third center, a guy that is a natural center who can win faceoffs and step in and play that role more naturally, as opposed to trying to use guys who have been more wingers down the middle like they had been prior. And look, Zary had been doing a fine job, but Frost's a guy with hundreds of games as an NHL center. And to see him jump right in and be a good fit almost immediately on this team, that's a real positive. That's a real encouraging thing for this team.
Yeah, absolutely it is. And it's funny you mentioned Connor Zary, because I think there's already a lot of fans daydreaming about what those two might look like on a line. They have a lot of, you know, similar qualities, a similar sort of confidence with the puck, a similar willingness to take some risks and attack. And, you know, maybe I think a potential chemistry with sort of what we saw from Kadri and Zary last year. Like, I think Frost and Zary have the potential to be a really fascinating combo for this team. And then, you know, one of the best compliments I think I could pay to Morgan Frost so far is I really like what he's brought out of Yegor Sharangovich.
Yep.
And so, yeah, you said it already, like, nothing against Joel Farabee, no knock on him, but they needed the center, and certainly through two games, which is not enough of a sample size, of the new guys, he's been the one who's really popped for me. And that's not that Farabee hasn't done some good things, but Frost is the guy I look at and go, oh, geez, they might have something here.
This was Morgan Frost on Tuesday morning. Of course, he grew up around the Toronto Maple Leafs. His dad, Andy Frost, was a former Maple Leafs PA announcer and some pre- and post-game work in the GTA Toronto market. And so Morgan grew up around this Maple Leafs team, and now in his third game as a member of the Flames, he'll take him on. He's played the Maple Leafs before, so it's not like that's new. But he spoke a little bit inside the Flames locker room Tuesday morning about fitting in and how things have gone so far with his new team.
To be honest with you, I think I've said it before, kind of everyone's made me feel welcome, and just going to try and build my game, and as we go, kind of learn how the team plays, and learn how I can integrate myself as best as possible, and you know, just do whatever I can to help the team win. But you know, obviously only been two games, but had a lot of fun so far.
Morgan, is that last game a pretty good indication of how you play every night? Like, is that what Flames fans should expect from you?
I think so. I think that's kind of been a thing with me in the past is trying to keep my consistency. So it's something that I work on very hard. And I think when I'm on, creating scoring chances, setting them up for other guys, and moving my feet. So something that I'll try and keep going, and hopefully I can bring that every night.
When you get airlifted in and dropped into a new group, how quickly does it kind of set in the urgency of this team situation and smack dab in the middle of protecting the playoff spot?
I think you can see the intensity on a game day just going through the meetings and the way the guys approach the games and the chatter in the room in between periods and before the game. So we knew what we were kind of coming into, and like I said, trying not to get in anyone's way or mess anything up, and just hopefully we can integrate ourselves and help this team go on a run.
So Morgan Frost spoke a little bit inside the Flames locker room Tuesday morning. He's been a really nice fit. I think you and I can agree on that. It's only been six periods, so it's not like we're talking about a definitive answer. But, you know, I think there might be a really nice fit continuing to go forward with him. And then Craig Conroy's got a bit of a decision to make in terms of how he wants to approach that contract. He is a pending restricted free agent, so the Flames will retain team control on him. He's a year away from being unrestricted. So anything that they sign for more than 1 year will be buying UFA years on Morgan Frost. And, you know, they're going to get a decent sample size of what he is as a member of the Flames. I'm really curious as to what that contract looks like. I don't think there's any doubt that they'll re-sign him. Like, he'll obviously extend here, but what does that number look like? And more so, what does that term look like? Is this a two-year bridge? Well, that's only buying 1 year of UFA. Is it a four-year situation, which gets him kind of to the age of 29, 30? I'm really interested to see what the future holds for him with this organization and what this next contract looks like, because I think that they're... It would just stand to reason that there's going to be some sort of extension between now and July, or now and next season, rather.
Understanding we're, as you said, six periods into Morgan Frost's tenure here with the Flames, if you were sitting in Craig Conroy's office, what sort of contract would you be after?
Probably a four-year deal.
Okay.
That would be what I'd be looking at if I could, if I had my druthers. But, you know, if you're the player, I don't know if four is the ideal range. You know, five might be a little bit more ideal on the player's side, just because you're buying that one more UFA here. And you know, it's tougher to hit it big when you expire in UFA at like 29, 30 years old. So if you could get that one more year of security, it might help. But I think four would be a really good number for the Flames, because then you'd be in a spot as the team to make a decision on what you want to do after that. Do you want to do another two or a three-year deal after that? Those types of things. But as long as it's not a one, because that walks him right to free agency, then you're probably in good shape.
You're in a interesting spot, and it might be advantageous to the Flames that Morgan Frost arrives from Philly with pretty mediocre numbers this year. And, you know, even if he, and you'd love this as whether it's a Flames fan or a Flames executive, even if he was a point per game guy for the rest of this season, it wouldn't put him much past 50 points. And so you have an opportunity, I think, to take advantage maybe isn't the right word, but you're not negotiating necessarily with a guy that you're wondering if he can match that point total. And he hasn't been a 50 point player, I don't believe, even in his career to this point.
46
being
his
high. Yeah. So, you know, if you're comfortable with what you see, and obviously you did a lot of digging before you acquired him in the first place, I think you can hope to get in at a decent rate and, you know, buy a few years and think, okay, we feel like this guy is still trending upwards. We feel like there's a lot of sort of untapped or not yet fully fulfilled potential here. And so, you know, let's give him a few years. Let's give him 4 or 5 years.
Yep.
And see if this can be one of those contracts. And, you know, Brad Treliving, who's back in the building tonight as general manager of the Maple Leafs.
What?
Did you not hear?
No.
I would have known that. One of his greatest strengths as general manager of the Flames was in negotiating with guys before they kind of became what they were, right? He had Elias Lindholm signed to what turned out to be a sweetheart deal. Rasmus Anderson is on what sure looks like a good deal right now. Obviously, you know, going to get a lot more on his next contract. And so, you know, Craig Conroy is going to aim to do exactly that with his next wave of RFAs. That includes Morgan Frost. It includes Zeri, Coronado. Dustin Wolf could be, based on the way he keeps playing his butt off, a different scenario. But you have a chance to lock in at a decent rate as these guys still are hitting numbers that they maybe haven't hit in their career.
I'm really interested to see where this one goes. It's not all that different. Like, the timing is very, very similar. In fact, I think it's like pretty close to the day. What was it? January 30th when the Flames acquired Morgan Frost and Farabee. Like, that's right around to the day when they traded away Dion Phaneuf and brought Matt Stajan in,
right,
along with three other pieces that remain nameless. But, you know, Stajan was the only long-term piece that the Flames kept from the Phaneuf trade. And it was like, I want to say a week later, two weeks at most, when he signed that deal. It was Daryl Sutter, the GM at the time, signed Matt Stajan to a four-year, $14 million contract, like, very shortly after being acquired. Did not play a lot of games before he signed that extension. That's kind of why, and it was around similar ages when Stage was brought in, and you know, he decided to barely knew the city, barely knew the organization, but decided to stay. I just wonder a little bit if something like that could be the could be in the not so distant future for a guy like Frost.
Yeah, I wonder about that. And obviously, you've got some more NHL footage there. You know, you know, maybe more so what he is at this level. Like, I look back less than a year ago, and you know, I don't know if Craig Conroy might want some sort of do-over on signing Miramanov to an extension immediately. And that's just a two-year deal. I'm not saying, you know, that that's something that the Flames need to regret. But as it turns out, they were signing him before they maybe saw how he fit or saw where he fit in. Now, that's a calculated risk you take as a general manager trying to get the best value possible. But you know, if this one with Morgan Frost goes beyond the end of this season, you know, if you're signing him closer to July or whatever, understanding he's going to remain under team control as an RFA, I guess what I'm saying is I don't think you need to rush into it, but I do see this being a long-term fit.
Okay, let me put you, before we pivot to Backlund, if I were to say right now, if you had the final decision-making capability, you decided whether or not this gets done.
That's not even how it works on Flames Talk, so it's hard for me to imagine myself in such a position of power.
You can be the final decision-maker anytime you want on Flames Talk. I have no death grip on that. Ready and willing to give it up. So say that Craig Conroy and Frost and his camp agreed to a four-year deal, four times $5 million. And you get to decide whether or not you do that deal. Do you rubber stamp that?
Four times five, like you're saying tomorrow.
Tomorrow, $20 million over 4 years.
Yeah, I think probably.
Yeah, I do too.
Now, and
he's at 2.1 right now, so you'd be more than doubling his salary, but I'd be fine with that.
Especially
if you could keep it at that term.
Here's the challenge, and I know that the Calgary Flames have gobs of cap space, but, and you and I, buddy, talked off air about this earlier today, you've got a bunch of contracts that are all going to impact one another, right? And especially looking at your restricted free agents. So if you're giving Morgan Frost a $5 million cap hit, what does that mean for Connor Zeri, and what does that mean for Matt Coronado? Two similarly offensively minded forwards or offensively gifted forwards. And that's not saying one-dimensional, but guys that you expect to contribute. They don't have the amount of NHL experience that Morgan Frost does, you know, but Morgan Frost has 11 goals right now. Well, so do they. Zary might still be a 10, but he's been out of the lineup for
yep.
weeks. And so now if you're offering an AAV of 5 to Morgan Frost, are you willing to offer somewhere in the 5 range to Zary? Are you willing to offer somewhere in the 5 range to Coronado? And I know that you're not just negotiating based on goals, but one of the challenges here for Craig Conroy, and then you add in Dustin Wolf and Kevin Ball as RFAs too, like you've got a bunch of significant pieces about to become RFA, and every one of those contracts is going to impact the others. So, yes, I think I would do 5.
The difference there is that Frost has almost triple the NHL yep. games that Zary does.
For sure. Like
and Coronado.
They're
right?
not necessarily apples to apples, and yet you know that the agents are going to be looking at what the team signs the other guys to and trying to put them in a pecking order.
Yep. And I think that they're a little bit different because I don't know if Zary's going to get 4. That
4 years.
Yeah, that might be more of a bridge. He and Coronado may be more of a bridge situation, whereas you've got a little – I think you know a little bit more what Frost is and at the age – like he turns 26 in May, so he'll be 26 for next season.
Yeah, but he's fresh in your organization.
He is, but that's why I think a 4-year term makes a ton of sense.
Yeah.
For me, I don't know if 4 years makes a ton of sense for Zary. I think you're either bridging him and keeping his salary low
sure.
or going long term. I think the same is exactly I think it's exactly the same with Coronado. You either do the 1 or the 2-year bridge
yeah.
and then think long term, or you take the risk and go 8 right away for guys
sure.
that could be foundational pieces. I don't think you do that with Frost because he's so close to unrestricted free agency, because he's older.
Yeah.
I think a 4-year term team-wise anyway makes a whole lot of sense.
And you raised a really good point in terms of, you know, you're not walking Coronado or Zary to free agency because
yep.
of the ages that they are. I just think, you know, it's amazing how quickly you go from having a ton of cap space to looking at it and going, okay, well, what sort of raise, what sort of term are we going with Dustin Wolf? And, you know, Connor Zary's injury, if there's a silver lining to it, it's probably saving the Calgary Flames a little bit of money. You know, Matt Coronado just continues to put up points, you know, continues to impress in his. And so I think that's going to be one of the challenges. And the good news for Craig Conroy is he's got enough money to give it to all of them, but you're already trying to project out several years and figure out how this cap is going to look.
Yep. Now, it is going up to $113 million just over that in
yeah.
the not-so-distant future. There's going to be room.
Unfortunately, because the agents also heard it's going up to 113, they want a bigger share
know.
Than ever
no,
for their
the
players.
Agents, the agents don't know that yet. They don't ever
Have
listen.
Have they not heard?
No. Don't tell them. That won't hurt. That'll hurt the teams. Hey, it's been a really, really couple texts on that topic at 960-960. This says a couple people were trying to correct me and say, no, Brian Burke signed Matt Stajan's extension. He signed the second extension that Stajan signed here in Calgary. Burke was the GM of the Maple Leafs when Stajan was acquired by the Flames. Daryl Sutter was the GM then. And, yeah, the first Stajan contract, 4 years, $14 million, that was signed by Daryl Sutter, the general manager at the time. But then the next contract, when Brian Burke had fired Jay Feaster and John Weisbrod and taken over as the interim GM before Treliving took over, yes, he did sign Matt Stajan there to an extension. And so Burke signed one of Stajan's extensions, but not the first one. Danny says, Frost is the man, and 4 years at $5 million per is a great deal. Sorry, Frost is better than Zary and Matt Coronado. And I don't know if he's better or not, but he does play center, and that is an important thing for this organization. This from Mick. The Flyers didn't like Farabee's contract. That's why he had to be a part of the deal. So why would you give Frost $5 million? I'm in the fours. I mean, I don't know if the contract that Farabee signed in Philly has anything to do with the deal that Frost could sign here with the Flames. Like, they're two completely unrelated things. And
yeah.
Frost, and again, this is not a shot at Farabee at all, but Frost is the guy that mattered more in the deal just because of the position he plays.
I think you were really trying to capitalize on the fact that the Flyers wanted to get rid of a deal that you found palatable. Like, that's you're looking at it and saying, oh, geez, you'll throw in Joel Farabee and it'll only cost us this much. I think you're trying to take advantage of the fact that the Flyers were looking in that sense to clear that contract.
Yep. You wanted to talk a little bit about Michael Backlund.
Yeah.
In fact, not only did you want to talk about him, you wanted to write about him, and you did. Over at the Post Media Sites, Wes, a little bit on Michael Backlund, who we did talk a little bit on Monday during our mailbag, which ended up being quite a popular podcast on Monday. Lots of people downloaded the mailbag podcast on Monday. We talked on Monday about how he's clearly playing through something, both on the round table and on the mailbag. Michael Backlund's playing through something right now. He's not practicing. He's not taking morning skates. He's not at 100%.
A
lot of maintenance days because he's got something going on. He can play through it, but he is he's definitely laboring through something right now. And then today, on this Tuesday, we found out officially that he won't be going to the Four Nations face-off as a replacement for William Karlsson. That'll be Rickard Rakell, who's getting the call instead of Michael Backlund. So you asked head coach Ryan Huska Tuesday morning about that and the potential benefits of Michael Backlund not going to the Four Nations.
Ryan, Sweden named a replacement for their Four Nations roster today, and it wasn't Michael Backlund. I'm just curious, you know, knowing he's the oldest guy on your roster, seems to be playing through something. Can that be a good news thing for the Flames that he's going to get a break?
Sure. You want them to get that experience, without a doubt. And I know he would have loved to have been in that situation. Still, who knows? There's still some time before it gets going. But if it doesn't end up working out for him, then yep, absolutely. When you're an older player and you play as hard and you play the minutes that he plays, I think having some time away is a great thing.
And I think if Ryan Huska was not in front of the media, and we know that the head coach is not the fondest, as most head coaches aren't, of speaking publicly about injuries or getting too specific about injuries to his players, I bet you behind closed doors, Ryan Huska would tell you that as a coach wanting his team to make the playoffs, he is thrilled that Michael Backlund is three games away from 2 weeks off.
And you know, about a week ago, exactly a week ago, actually, it was the day of the Washington Capitals visit. I was having a chat with Michael Backlund on a bunch of topics, and the excitement of being in the wild card race and all sorts of different things. And one of the things I asked him was, you know, if Sweden calls about William Karlsson's spot, are you still interested? Like, would you be willing to scrap whatever vacation you might have planned to go to the Four Nations? And, you know, Michael Backlund told me, well, I'm trying not to focus on it. I'm focused on winning games here, helping this team. He said, if they call and if I'm 100%, then of course I'd go. And the if I'm 100% really stuck with me, because that was Michael Backlund essentially saying, the way I'm feeling, and I'm paraphrasing here and maybe taking a little liberty in doing that, but what I was hearing as I read between the lines was, the way I'm feeling, it wouldn't make a ton of sense for me to go.
Yep.
And that, you know, that shows you, and we don't have to, you know, we don't have to reinforce for any of our listeners how invested Michael Backlund is in what the Flames are doing. Michael Backlund's had a whole lot of seasons here in Calgary that ended without playoff hockey. But I think that 2 weeks before games, for a guy who, as you said, isn't practicing, isn't taking a lot of morning skates, and yet goes out there and leads the team among forwards in ice time more nights than not. Like, the fact that you could get your oldest and one of your most important players 2 weeks off at this point in the season, I think could be a real, real benefit.
And he's also about to turn 36.
Yeah.
Like, and on top of all of that,
spring chicken.
Like, And that's not, 36 is very young for the world, but, you know, 36 is starting to move towards the end of your career in professional hockey.
Yeah.
And 36, like, he was born in the 80s. We were born in the 80s. Mm-hmm. Like,
that's about all we have in common.
That's true. I think you're a nice guy. You're a really nice guy who cares about people, just like Backlund. There's that.
I appreciate
that
you saying that. Yeah. I don't know if it's accurate, but I appreciate you saying it.
Your hair, both beautiful.
Now, see, now you're fibbing.
I don't know why I took that pot shot. That was so completely unnecessary. But he's we get up in the morning and like our did you just pick your teeth up? we get up in the morning and like our backs hurt now. It's like, oh, like he's closer to 40 than he is to 30. And he is an elite 0.001% athlete. Like there are many differences between the physical attributes of Michael Backlund and us two. I'm by no means am I trying to compare us in that regard, but like not only is he playing through something, not only is he one of your most important players, not only is he still your best shutdown center, no questions asked. He's also almost 36 years old.
Yeah.
So all these things in terms of maintaining energy and now the fact that he's playing through something, like, yeah, it would have been neat to go see him play for Sweden, but from a Calgary Flames perspective, this 2 weeks of him not playing games is going to be massive, and a full week or more of not practicing is going to be huge.
Yeah, and I know there's been some, you know, criticism of Backlund of late, and really criticism, I think, of the penalty killing more than anything. And I just think it is so obvious to me, and I know it's been so obvious to you for quite some time, like whatever he's playing through is hampering him. Whatever he's playing through, and hey, he's still been a good player for the Flames. Please don't take that as me saying otherwise. But Michael Backlund, if he can get 5 or 10% or 15% closer to full health over the Four Nations break, it's going to be a massive development for a team that everyone shut down center is important, but this team needs to win low scoring, tight checking games. Well, who's one of your most important players to doing that? Michael Backlund.
Yep. Yep.
Great hair too, as you said.
He does have, always has.
Yeah.
You know, maybe not. He had the frosted tips going when he got drafted.
That was a tough look.
But, I mean, it was a time when frosted tips was more of a thing. That was 2007. That was almost 20 years ago.
Yeah.
So, like, it was a different time back then. It's Pat and Wes along with you on this hour of Flames Talk. I apologize for that empty netter that was completely unnecessary.
That was an empty netter.
And speaking of the Four Nations Face-Off, this is your final week if you would like to win this awesome prize, because the Four Nations Face-Off starts next week in Montreal and Boston. Canada, Finland, Sweden, United States, best on best, and Sportsnet is a proud partner of the event and giving you the chance to win a VIP trip to watch a game through Rogers Beyond the Seat. We've got one more prize of a pair of tickets with travel and accommodations to the event with a new winner that has been picked for the last 4 weeks, but this is the last week. February 7th, end of the week, is your deadline, so if you'd like to enter and haven't entered yet, go to rogers.com/Four Nations. One more pair of tickets with accommodation and travel to the Four Nations next week. Fans in Canada can watch every game of the Four Nations Face-Off exclusively on Sportsnet and Sportsnet Plus. And one more time, for more information and to enter, and enter this week, go to rogers.com/Four Nations.
Flames Talk is on the air and streaming on the Sportsnet mobile app. Sportsnet 960 The Fan, Calgary.
Wes, along with you on this Tuesday edition of your Flames Talk on a, well, funny enough, on a Tuesday, your Flames Talk PM. I don't know what I was trying to say there. But Nazem Kadri spoke to the media on Tuesday morning, and as you'd expect.
Is that
former,
this morning?
This morning.
This Tuesday.
This Tuesday morning.
Okay.
You know what? I deserve that. I deserve everything coming to me after my just complete unsolicited.
Just a savaging.
What an absolute jerk. It's the Leafs in town. They like to talk to former Leafs. Nazem Kadri's a former Leaf. I don't know if you knew that. But your ears perked up when he was asked by the Toronto media about Dustin Wolf for a few different reasons. I'll play the clip first, and then you can tell us why this kind of caught your interest so much. This was Nazem Kadri when asked about Dustin Wolf on Tuesday morning.
What did you learn about Dustin Wolf this season?
He's a player. He's a player. He's quite a player. I mean, he obviously he's earned his stripes to get up here. I think he's still got a few more stripes to earn in the league, but he's done everything that's asked of him, and he's a big time player. He wants to he wants the stage. He wants to be great, and he's accountable, which is nice to see.
How seriously should we be considering him for the Calder?
Very serious. I mean, you just look at his numbers alone. I think he's gonna have a long career in this league for sure. He's off to a great start, and I'm sure he'd like to give his teammates some credit too. Standing in front of him, but he's been timely. He's made some great saves when we've needed him, and he's one of the reasons why we're in this position.
So that was Nazem Kadri, but what? And some really cool stuff there from him when asked about Dustin Wolf. But I know that really stood out to you and really jumped off the page to you. How come?
Yeah, just going back to last year, especially when Nazem Kadri was playing on a line with Connor Zary and Martin Pospisil, he strikes a very good balance, I think, between, being positive about young players. But I wouldn't say he's, I don't think he overdoes his praise of anyone, but young guys in particular. And I just remember every time he was asked about Zary and Pospisil last year, he'd talk about how impressed he was, but then it always circled back to this is a hard league and it's about doing it consistently. And it's about, that sort of extended run of proving yourself. And so to hear Nazem Kadri come out today and speak so highly of Dustin Wolf, that just tells me, and maybe I'm guilty of reading too much into this, but that just tells me that he has been really, really impressed with the young goalie. And I'm sure he'll say the same things about consistency. And, I hope I'm not misrepresenting it. It's not like he was ever slagging his line mates or anything last year, but he's just, he's careful not to, I think, overdo the expectations of young players. He's not the guy who's going to go overboard when, talking about someone with a small sample size. And I just thought his comments about Dustin Wolf and knowing that the Toronto media being in town heightens the national spotlight on the Calgary Flames for that day, I thought those comments were very telling and very insightful.
Yep. And I also, I like it a lot that, from a Calgary standpoint, now all of a sudden you're getting, and we always like to make light of the fact that, the hockey media is only the Toronto media, and the networks only care about the Maple Leafs and all that type of stuff. And sometimes that's true. And you kind of just have to accept it being out here in the West. But when the Toronto media focuses on somebody who doesn't play the Maple Leafs, that I think gives you an idea as to, and I don't even say this like tongue in cheek, but the center of the hockey world,
yeah,
it really is Toronto. Whether we love that or not, it really is. They've got a massive following. It's the biggest city in the country, in the biggest hockey nation in the world. It is the center of hockey media. And so to hear them talking about Dustin Wolf, to all those people, and I get it all the time, there's a certain group of Dustin Wolf doubters out there. Oh, no, he's only in the Calder mix in this city. Nobody outside the league, outside the city of Calgary, is thinking about Dustin Wolf for the Calder. The fact that Mark Masters and Luke Fox and some of the other national members of the Toronto media are asking about Dustin Wolf, that I think tells you that the rest of the league has caught on.
Yeah, I always find it sort of enlightening to find out who the Toronto media, and I'd even say the same when you go to some of the, center of the hockey universe in the U.S. type places, right? When you're in Boston or when you're at Madison Square Garden, I always find it really enlightening to find out who they're asking about, right?
I
traveled for years with the team, and I'd go to all these different places, Boston or New York or Toronto, and it was always about Johnny Gaudreau, or it was always about Matthew Tkachuk, and really now for it to be about Dustin Wolf tells you a lot about what he's doing and how it's being perceived on a much wider than Calgary scale.
Yep. I mean, at this point, it would actually be a bit of a shock if he's not one of the Calder finalists at this point. And that's not a Calgary guy talking about Calgary player. That's just reading the tea leaves and how much he has made an impact in other markets with the way he's gone in and played against their team, whether it be in their building or in this building. It would be a bit of a surprise if he's not a finalist when it's all said and done.
Well, and I think...
Unless he falls completely off.
I think, and Dustin Wolf is not driven by Calder Trophy consideration, but when I wrote about, okay, well, is the Calder a realistic possibility for Wolf? You know, one of the points that I made, and this was a few weeks ago now, is that one thing working against him at that point certainly was his road record. And
that started to normalize now.
It has. And I think games like this, and I understand this is a home game and not a road game, but games like this, or, you know, games at Madison Square Garden, at Air Canada, sorry, at Scotiabank Arena, at, you know, some of these other places they're going to go later in the season, you know, they're going to have a big impact on Dustin Wolf's Calder candidacy. And I can just share this as a voter. You do all your due diligence. You do the research on the stats and, you know, you dig in as much as you can. But the Calder especially, a big part of it is just, hey, when I saw this guy play for the first and second time in his career, what did I think? You know, was he the most impressive rookie I saw? Did he stand out? And so if Dustin Wolf, when he has the extra eyeballs on him, because a voter can't watch all 82 games of Dustin Wolf, like I can't see all 82 or however many Macklin Celebrini finishes with. So when you get those live viewings, they mean something. And I think if Dustin Wolf sort of takes advantage, and again, I know it's not about the Calder for him, but if he has some big games against these, you know, big market teams, it's going to go a long way.
Last piece of news to get to before we wrap up the hour, and that last piece of news is some good news because a couple injured players are progressing per head coach Ryan Huska. First, you asked about Connor Zary on Tuesday morning after we found out last week that he has a plan to return skating. It was last week on Thursday when we found out that Connor Zary is ready to start skating again, and Ryan Huska told us then sometime in the next week that he is going to start skating, and we got a little bit of an update on that Tuesday morning.
He's been on the ice two times here. The last 2 days he's been on the ice, and he's going to continue to keep skating. So everything's looking good. Yeah.
Well, is there an updated timeline? Like, might he be an option before the Four Nations?
We'll see. He's progressing. He was on the ice with Connor the last couple days as well.
So there is two in one injury updates. Mm-hmm. Connor Zary and Kevin Ball have both started skating with one another. Zary coming back from a lower body injury, knee injury. Kevin Ball coming back from an upper body injury, suspected concussion. So good to hear that they're both starting to skate, progressing.
Yeah.
And you know, now all of a sudden you've got some hope that both guys could return fairly shortly after the Four Nations break. I think with Ball, if they really wanted to, they could have a conversation about getting him back before the break. I don't know that for sure, but just, you know, sometimes the way that injury can potentially work, you never know. But, you know, probably at this point, with him just starting to skate again, maybe can be in a situation where you hold him over and don't bring him back until after the break. And with Zary, that 2 weeks of getting that recovery time without missing any game action could be really huge for him.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, one of the reasons I asked for a follow-up today is...
Because you're a very good,
intrepid.
Thorough,
would you say intrepid? Would you say intrepid
I would
reporter?
Say you are an intrepid newsboy.
Thank you. I like the way you termed that. We heard last week Ryan Huska say, you know, Connor will be back on the ice in a very limited fashion. They were targeting this week, and when I walked into the Flames locker room this morning, one of the first things I noticed was that all his gear was hung up to dry, typically a sign that a guy has skated earlier that day. And so that's why I asked about it. I mean, if we're talking about Connor Zary as a possibility shortly or even sort of midterm after the Four Nations break, that'll be very encouraging. I mean, it looked awful at the time. We were expecting months, and I think we're now coming up on almost exactly a month. It was January 7th that the injury happened, but the fact that within or at about 4 weeks he's back on his blades is a pretty good sign for this team.
So the Flames are back after the Four Nations break on Sunday, February 23rd, when they'll host San Jose.
Mm-hmm.
And because I guess technically we're calling this a three-game homestand. I mean, technically it's a four-game homestand because they play four straight on home ice.
Right.
And then they go out on that longest six-game road trip of the season afterwards. So if they can get them back at any point, whether it's the Sunday against San Jose or sometime on that six-game trip, I think we know Ball will be back right around then, but if they get Zeri back in those first six, seven games,
yeah,
that would be a massive return, especially, as you said, based on how it looked.
Well, and one of the unique things coming out of that break is, yes, they're back in action on the 23rd, but they're going to be practicing 4 or 5 consecutive days or have the opportunity to practice.
They're allowed to. The CBA allows you to return on the 18th, which is the Tuesday,
yeah,
at 2 p.m. Calgary time. And I believe they're scheduled to practice
at
2 p.m. that day.
So they could practice. I'm sure they'll I don't even know if they would. They could practice 5 days in a row. And
don't they will?
Yeah, I was just going to say, I'm sure they'll take a day off, but they'll have just had a bunch of days off. Anyways, if that's a great opportunity to, even if he's not playing right away, if he's cleared the other hurdles, that gives you an extended runway to mix a guy back into your group. And it's not like Connor Zeri is a stranger and needs a million practices with the team to, you know, remember everyone's first names. But just as you... as you mix him back in after an injury, I think that gives you a pretty good opportunity.
He's Wes Gilbertson on Twitter at Wes Gilbertson. My name is Pat Steinberg. Thanks to Cam Hughes and Shan Virgie back at Sportsnet 960 World Control as we start to wrap things up this hour on Flames Talk. This hour has been the Sports Drive brought to you by Calgary Lock and Safe. Simplify your life with a security ecosystem. Go to CalgaryLockAndSafe.com to request a security audit and get a tailored solution.